Today is Friday, March 19th, and you are listening to International Edition under Voice of America. I am Chinedwofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden to meet Asian community over Atlanta killings.
There is no doubt that abuse, prejudice, and violence against Asian Americans is on the rise.
Also, Tanzania swears in first female president.
Samia Suluhu Hassan was sworn in at State House in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam. She is the East African country's sixth president since independence from Britain.
Plus, House of Representatives approved key elements of Biden's immigration agenda. These stories and more are next. President Joe Biden is meeting with Asian American community in Atlanta, Georgia on Friday, following a shooting that killed 8 people, including 6 women of Asian descent. Attacks and other incidents against Asian Americans have increased during the past year, with some placing the blame on the Trump administration's characterization of the pandemic as the, quote, China flu, unquote. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has more.
Increased police presence in Chinatowns across the United States following Tuesday's shooting at 3 spas in Atlanta, Georgia, that took the lives of 8 people, including 6 women of Asian descent. The shooting has brought a focus on hate crimes.
There is no doubt that abuse, prejudice, and violence against Asian Americans is on the rise, and it is so un-American and so despicable that we all must be speaking out about this.
This and other incidents have triggered fear and outrage in the Asian American community, with some blaming the previous administration.
Ever since Trump, you know, started calling it the China virus and, you know, blaming China, and, you know, I think that puts, you know, a mentality into people's head.
Former President Trump's rhetoric,
it's not racist at all, no, not at all. It comes from China.
Has contributed to the discrimination, said White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The massive megaphone you have from the White House is something that is heard across the country, and it's important to then be thoughtful about the words you use and how you convey opposition to discrimination of any kind.
With the flag at the White House lowered to honor the victims, President Joe Biden is traveling to Atlanta on Friday to speak with community leaders. In his first week in office, he signed a memorandum condemning xenophobia and instructed federal agencies to bolster data collection and prevention of hate incidents and to ensure that the pandemic response is culturally and racially sensitive. Asian American activists say more needs to be done. Russell Chong is co-founder of Stop Asian American and Pacific Islanders Hate and a professor of Asian American Studies at San Francisco State University.
We really do call on government on all levels to be responsive and sensitive to the Asian American community at this moment, from school districts to legal authorities to mental health and health departments. We need government's responsiveness at this moment.
An assessment report on domestic violent extremism released by the U.S. intelligence community this week described an elevated threat from racially and ethnically motivated extremists, including toward Asian Americans.
President Biden is touting a vaccination milestone, even as his administration says it is in position to help American neighbors get more vaccine doses. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
President's goal was 100 million shots administered in his first 100 days. He says that'll be met on day 58.
We're way ahead of schedule, but we got a long way to go.
He's calling it a time for optimism, but not relaxation, noting virus cases rising in some states. Still, as America's vaccination program ramps up, the White House says it's finalizing a deal to loan 4 million AstraZeneca shots to Canada and Mexico. The vaccine's not authorized for use in the U.S., and the Biden administration has faced calls to share it with nations whose citizens can take it. Sagar Magani, Washington.
China has become a major supplier of vaccines to Latin America, and the United States has come under criticism for not sharing its vaccine supplies with its neighbors. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sane reports, the White House says the Biden administration is now working on a plan to start sharing.
Hope has arrived at this clinic in La Paz, Bolivia, in the form of Sinovac and Sinopharm vaccines from China. Bolivia, like other Latin American countries, has been ravaged by COVID-19. China says it plans to provide vaccines to 53 countries, including many in Latin America. China says it is taking the action to make COVID vaccines accessible and affordable for developing countries. Experts say China's sharing of medical supplies, after the pandemic originated in Wuhan, has given Beijing a diplomatic boost and also soft power leverage in Mexico, Brazil, and other developing nations. Trevor Sutton is with the Center for American Progress in Washington.
China has been able to contain the pandemic within its borders more effectively than the United States and other Western democracies have. That means there's less demand for the vaccine in China, and it gives the Chinese government more breathing room to send vaccines abroad.
But Secretary of State Antony Blinken, while visiting Asia, cautioned there are strings attached to China's medical diplomacy. And most experts, such as Benjamin Gadan at the Wilson Center, agree there is nothing soft about China's approach.
The way the Chinese are handling the vaccine distribution is not from a real magnanimous humanitarian attitude, but a pretty aggressive approach that essentially demands that Huawei get access to telecommunications auctions in Latin America, that Taiwan be held at arm's length throughout the region.
President Joe Biden has said he is focused on getting all Americans vaccinated before exporting supplies. But he did say the U.S. will share vaccines.
I've been talking with several countries already. Well, I'll let you know that very shortly.
Many experts agree it is not a question of America hoarding vaccines while its Latin American neighbors desperately need them.
I think the notion that the United States is hoarding vaccines is overstated. And the fact is that there's more demand than supply within the United States, which, along with Brazil, is one of the worst hit countries in the world.
Biden says he wants all American adults to be able to register for a vaccine by May, and he hopes people will be able to safely gather in small groups again for the July 4th U.S. Independence Day holiday. Experts say once that happens, the U.S. will likely become a major exporter of vaccines around the world. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
House lawmakers on Thursday passed two key elements of President Joe Biden's ambitious immigration agenda, but as VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, the nation's larger immigration debate remains unresolved.
Growing numbers of asylum seekers and unaccompanied minors are arriving along the U.S.-Mexico border, prompting the Biden administration to offer assurances that the nation's often dysfunctional immigration system is under control. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The vast majority of people, vast majority who come to the border are turned away. The border is not open. These are very limited scenarios.
Congressional Republicans say Biden's campaign promise to legalize 11 million undocumented immigrants already in this country is encouraging more people to come. House Minority Leader Representative Kevin McCarthy.
That's why you put your whole family together and make this trek, because you just listen to what President Biden said.
The number of migrants crossing into the U.S. is rising, according to the Department of Homeland Security. The Senate's top Republican calls these numbers a crisis. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
It's a security crisis as well. New reporting suggests multiple people arrested at the border in recent months have matched to names on the FBI's terrorist watch list.
Migrants now crossing the border would not be impacted by legislation if it passes Congress, but the initiative could alter the politics of immigration in Washington. Doris Messner at the Migration Policy Center.
It gives those who are opposed to immigration changes a hook to hang on and to be criticizing the administration. So it really narrows or complicates the political space that's there for the Biden administration to move on these legislative proposals.
House Democrats passed two narrower proposals Thursday that would legalize some foreign-born farm workers, as well as the so-called Dreamers, undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
If we ever close the door to new Americans, our leadership in the world would be lost. It has always been a pleasure for me to sing the praises of our Dreamers. They make us so proud.
A strategy meant to win Republican votes in a U.S. Senate narrowly controlled by Democrats. Doris Messner at the Migration Policy Center.
Those are populations that have been appealing across the board, and there's very strong public support, particularly for the DACA population, which would be the Dream Promise Act. But it's also the case that they are limited populations.
If those bills become law, up to 2 million Dreamers would be put on a path to U.S. citizenship. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Samia Suluhu Hassan has been sworn in as Tanzania's first female president, the first from the Zanzibar archipelago, following the death of John Magufuli. David Doyle reports.
Samia Suluhu Hassan.
Tanzania's first female president was sworn in on Friday, following the death of John Magufuli. Samia Suluhu Hassan was sworn in at State House in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam. She is the East African country's sixth president since independence from Britain in 1961. Hassan is also the country's first head of state from the semi-autonomous Zanzibar archipelago. Tanzanian politics have traditionally been dominated by politicians from the mainland. Described as a softly spoken consensus builder, Hassan's leadership style is seen as a potential contrast to brash populist Magufuli. The vocal coronavirus skeptic had not been seen in public for more than 2 weeks when Hassan announced his death on Wednesday. She will now have to grapple with the health impact of COVID-19 that her predecessor long denied, including whether to procure vaccines. Hassan also faces the pandemic's economic consequences in a country polarized by 6 years of Magufuli's rule.
A great son of Africa, an independent leader who refused to bow to foreign powers, an anti-corruption crusader, a COVID-19 denier, a budding authoritarian across the African continent and the world, reactions are streaming in, both loving and searing, over the announcement of the death of Tanzania President John Magufuli. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa expressed his deep sadness in a short statement Thursday morning, following word that Tanzanian President John Magufuli had died. South Africa is united in grief with the government and people of Tanzania, he said. Magufuli was only 61, and according to Tanzanian officials, he died of heart disease. Magufuli had not appeared in public for more than 2 weeks, and opposition politicians claimed he had contracted COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Magufuli stood alone among African leaders in denying the existence of the virus in his country. Last June, he declared his coastal nation free of the virus, a claim many African health experts questioned. As one of the continent's most respected leaders, Ramaphosa set the tone for much of the comment coming from the continent in the wake of Magufuli's death. Leaders and luminaries from Nigeria, Uganda, Somalia, Zimbabwe, and former African power Britain were quick to issue statements mourning Magufuli. On Thursday, opposition leaders and analysts from the continent and beyond called him out for his increasingly tight grip on civil liberties and the media in Tanzania, and on his denial of the pandemic. Nick Cheeseman, professor of democracy at the University of Birmingham, says Magufuli's legacy is complicated.
On the one hand, there will be those who cite him as a transformational leader who reduced corruption and strengthened the Tanzanian state and government. On the other hand, there are going to be people who point to his legacy on COVID-19 and suggest that ordinary Tanzanians died when they didn't have to as a result of his neglect.
But perhaps the most telling reaction from outside of East Africa has come from the U.S. State Department, which released a short, terse statement saying little about the man and ending with the sentences, "The United States remains committed to continuing to support Tanzanians as they advocate for respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms and work to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. We extend our condolences to Tanzanians mourning the passing of President John Pombe Magufuli." Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Protests continued across Myanmar on Friday despite the threat of a broader crackdown by security forces. Eyewitnesses said protesters facing off with security forces in Yawadi. A protester said that police fired rubber bullets into the crowd of protesters, injuring two before the protesters dispersed. Military and police have used increasingly violent tactics to suppress demonstrations by supporters of detained elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi, but that has not put off the protests, with crowds again in several towns. The total number killed in weeks of unrest has risen to at least 224. The Assistance Association of Political Prisoners activist group said, noting another death in the commercial hub of Yangon and two of the cities of Monya and Bago on Thursday. This is the Voice of America. Turkish police on Friday detained several pro-Kurdish party officials and human rights activists as prosecutors increased the pressure on the country's third-largest party. A top public prosecutor Wednesday demanded the dissolution of the leftist opposition People's Democratic Party over alleged links to Kurdish militants. The move followed the expulsion of an HDP MP from the parliament on the same day. Officials detained 10 people in Istanbul, including three HDP district chairs in the city, state news agency said. Malaysia says it will order all North Korean diplomats to leave the country within 48 hours. The announcement came after North Korea said it was terminating diplomatic ties with Malaysia to protest its decision to extradite a North Korean to the United States to face money laundering charges. North Korea says the money laundering case is an absurd fabrication and sheer plot orchestrated by the United States. Experts say North Korea is taking a tough stance over the extradition because it sees it as a U.S. pressure tactic against the North. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Water levels on the Euphrates River in northern Syria have fallen drastically in recent weeks as Kurdish officials there accused Turkey of reducing the volume of flowing water downstream. Turkish officials have not commented on accusations, but they say they too are experiencing water shortages. As Edward Uranian reports from Cairo, farmers are voicing concerns about a situation that some analysts say could further destabilize the region.
Ibrahim Al-Hamadi, a farmer in the largely Kurdish region of Kobani, tries to plow his parched field in northern Syria as water levels on the nearby Euphrates River appear to be at historic low levels. Hamadi says he needs to work his fields or he will die of starvation, but water levels continue to drop. He says that areas of dry land that have appeared were once part of the river until water levels started to drop in February, leaving white silt and mudflats in some places. Abdullah, a middle-aged farmer from Hasaka, told Arab media Turkey is responsible for drying up the Euphrates River. He says that water affects man, agriculture, and nearly everything. Turkey, he maintains, is doing this. The UN, human rights groups, and the whole world, he says, need to bring the water back because water is life for man. Turkish officials told Arab media that Ankara is experiencing serious water shortages as well. Turkey in the past has temporarily reduced the river's flow during times of drought. Iraq's water minister Mehdi al-Hamadani recently told a water conference in Baghdad the water crisis is affecting Syria, Iraq, and other countries in the region to the point where it is damaging both the land and the environment. He said that the areas around the Tigris and Euphrates rivers have witnessed serious droughts in recent years, increasing evaporation, and major environmental issues in Iraq and its neighbors. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Russia held a conference on Afghanistan in Moscow Thursday. It is part of an intense diplomatic push led by the United States to jumpstart a stalled peace process. Ayaz Tanzin reports for VOA South Asia Bureau in Islamabad.
Thursday's Moscow conference is supposed to be the first of several focused on achieving a lasting peace in Afghanistan, one of the world's most chronically war-torn nations. Two more international conferences are expected as early as next month, one hosted by the United Nations and the other by Turkey. The hectic diplomatic activity is pushed by the United States mainly due to fears that Afghanistan would descend into chaos if the foreign forces in the country leave without a political settlement. The U.S. signed a deal with the Taliban last year, promising a full withdrawal of foreign forces by May 1st this year. The withdrawal was supposed to be accompanied by a political settlement between the warring sides. That effort has failed so far. In his opening remarks, translated into English here, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said negotiation was the only way forward.
And it is only through diplomatic peace process negotiations and compromise that peace can be achieved. And the agreements that are to be reached have to include the interests of all parties.
In a joint statement, conference host Russia, the U.S., and two regional powers, China and Pakistan, called on all sides to reduce violence and complete their peace negotiations. Next month's conference in Turkey aims to build on momentum from the Moscow gathering. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
The UN Refugee Agency reports its global response to the coronavirus pandemic has largely succeeded in containing the widespread transmission of the deadly infection among refugee populations around the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 80 million people globally have been forcibly displaced by persecution, conflict, and violence, including 26 million refugees. When the coronavirus surfaced, the UN Refugee Agency was concerned about its ability to tackle the spread of the infection that causes the COVID-19 disease. Of particular concern was the ability to prevent the coronavirus from spreading rapidly and widely among refugees living in the far-flung remote rural areas and in congested refugee camps. The UNHCR's Resilience and Solutions Director, Sajad Malik, says refugees in urban areas are better able than those in rural areas to maintain social distancing, access health systems, and cope with testing and contact tracing.
We had to put in systems in place where social distancing could be practiced. We had to provide additional water in many of these locations. Remember, 15 to 20 liters per person per day in an emergency is absolutely essential, which is not even available in some places. So to bring extra water, extra hygiene for washing, and all the rest was quite a massive undertaking.
Through the generosity of international donors and development agencies, the UNHCR received $492 million in 2020, allowing the agency to pre-position large quantities of essential personal protective equipment and medical equipment. Money also was spent on general assistance programs, including livelihood support, education for children, and mental and psychosocial support. The agency has confirmed some 63,000 infections among refugees, although it acknowledges this number may be higher. The agency's Deputy Resilience and Solutions Director, Marianne Schilperud, says a major task for the coming year is to ensure refugees are included in national vaccination programs.
We know that currently 106 countries have included refugees and other and internally displaced persons in their plans, and that others are still working very hard on the inclusion of these. We are continuing to work very closely with the COVAX partners to ensure that we're able to provide this access, which is an estimated 20% by the end of this year.
COVAX is a global vaccine distribution plan that aims to deliver tens of millions of vaccine doses to low and middle income countries. UNHCR officials say they are not looking for preferential treatment for refugees, but add it is essential that they are not overlooked. The officials say evidence shows the inclusion of refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants in national vaccination programs benefits the entire community, whereas exclusion carries with it a heavy price. The agency is seeking $455 million to implement this year's COVID-19 Global Preparedness and Response Plan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.